In the field, other species other than Lariaceae have not been affected. And he also challenged host seedlings with beetles. You see in the lower right corner there where he put beetles in gel caps and put those on some of these hosts. And they also came down with the wilt fungus, wilt disease. Some of the work that Jim Haniel has been doing on the beetles and trapping and host attraction, lots of information there. I think some of the good information is, some of the important stuff is beetles, at least in the southeast there, seem to fly year-round. Male emergence, he's basing the generation time on when they start catching males in traps. These are Xyliburine ambrosia beetles. Males don't fly, but he has these traps in the trees, and when they start getting males falling out of those trees into the traps, which are originally on uninfested trees, he's assuming that was the length of the generation. Anyway, so about 50 to 60 days. The key here, too, is that the best attractant seems to be red bay bolts or red bay trap trees. If you injure a red bay tree, that's the best attractant. I guess the good news is that sassafras bolts do not appear to be very attractive. They are attacking sassafras, but where they're attacking sassafras appears to be where there's a lot of dying red bay, and they may be spilling over into the sassafras. On the very bottom there, you see Manuka oil. If you were listening to some of the Emerald Ash Borer talks yesterday, Manuka oil seems to be an attractant for that, and when they tested that, they found that it's just about as good as the red bay bolts. So invest in Manuka oil. Some good news and bad news, I guess, on this slide. They're testing avocado here, and you can see there that the beetles per trap is, these are avocado bolts, I guess, or traps on avocado trees and red bay trees, I think that's what it was. And number of beetles per trap was just about the same as it was on red bay. Although it seems like the avocado was not quite as good a host, they didn't have as many entrance holes. They were landing on the traps, but not as many entrance holes. So that's good news, although, as I said before, all you need is about one or two beetles to attack this tree, vector the fungus, and the tree's going down. So whether or not they use it as a host may have some implications on whether or not it can sustain itself in an avocado grove. Here's some other work on avocado. What got the attention of a lot of people just about 3 or 4 months ago was a large avocado tree was killed in a backyard, a residential avocado tree outside of Jacksonville. This was the first field-infected avocado. They knew it could be infected in the lab. And then they did some choice tests on different varieties, and you see there only the Simmons variety appeared to be wilted and died from the fungus. Beetles bored into all the ones that they tested, but only that species, only that variety seemed to be affected by the fungus. So somewhat good news there. Management possibilities, well, that's going to be a tough one. Obviously, it's too late for eradication. Restricting firewood movement or movement infested wood is again important. Sanitation has to be quick and I guess I want to continue, huh? Yeah? Yeah? You don't know. Okay, Chris. And now? Cancel. Okay, I'll talk quick. Let's see. Could I change slides? No, can't even change slides. So trying to develop resistant trees, trapping out, I'm not too sure about that one. And I'm not sure what the rest of the slides say. So. No idea.
Yeah, just
saying restart it.
All yours.
It's way out of my hands now. Bad things are going to happen.
Do what?
Alt continue?
Oh.
Okay, so Bud has done some. I'm going to talk real fast. I'm not touching anything. You want to stand here? Bud did some fungicide work and injected 10 trees with Alamo and had very good results. 10 of the 10 trees, which he then challenged with the fungus, did not show symptoms, and the control trees all showed the wilt fungus. And when he took samples from those infected trees and put them in petri dishes, they also had very good inhibition in the lab. So some promise there, although that would be obviously for high value, say residential trees. In closing, okay, make it through two more slides. Again, these are Bud's slides. He's saying how similar it is here to Dutch elm disease. I think that's true, certainly in the disease cycle, as well as the potential impact that it's going to have in the southeast. What's scary here, though, is the broad host range. It's not just one genus, but appears to be the whole family. Varying degrees of pathogenicity maybe within the family, but certainly within the family of Loraceae. And Loraceae is a very common family once you get into other parts of Central and South America. So lots of concern there, or there should be lots of concern. More research is needed, obviously, and that's Bud's little plug on the very bottom there about more teeth needed for phytosanitary solid wood packing standards. In January of 07, we had a Laurel Wilt Working Group meeting, the first one we had, and we put together a steering committee. We have various committees here looking at monitoring and impacts and regulation and management and research. So we're just getting started. We're looking similar structure to the California Oak Mortality Task Force, trying to raise awareness and get people's attention that this is potentially a very serious problem. There's also a website hosted by our southern region, Region 8 of the Forest Service. There's lots of good information, a lot of PowerPoints from that January meeting are on there, and that's kind of the place where we're putting the latest maps and the latest information. And I think that's it. We made it.
Guess we have time for one quick question.
That's
it. Can the elbow be applied? Can it be absorbed
in the whole year? No, I think Alamo is just injected into the... One more? Done?
Yeah, one more.
Laura?
We'll push the envelope here. Laura?
Laura?
Okay. What are the chances of like the regular mineral model trap that ethanol and other lures for collecting other exotic hard beetles? What are the chances of this falling into the trap? Is more like
yeah. Falling into it may be the case. It doesn't seem to be as different as most ambrosia beetles will be attracted to the ethanol. This one does not seem to be that attracted to ethanol, so it may be more by chance that you'll get it in an ethanol trap.
A little intimidating being here. I'm used to talking to beekeeper groups, and so I'm used to seeing a lot of familiar faces, and there are a few out there, so thanks for being here. I want to emphasize that this talk here is, you know, when CCD started, we really did try to pull a large team together. And you can see some of the institutions that were initially involved. And in a lot of ways, what I'm going to be talking about in the next little while is talking about how we collected samples, some of our results, and then these samples were widely distributed among these partners. And so I'll be doing that. But before I do that, I think it's important to put in context colony losses. And if we look in Pennsylvania specifically in 1980, we had nearly 80,000 colonies. However, when we had the introduction of these foreign mites, honeybee trachoma mites, followed by varroa mites, we saw large declines in bee populations. And consistently, to this day, most of the colonies that are being lost are probably being lost by these mites. And we don't have a handle on controlling mites. This has implications in two ways. First, we know that beekeepers have become very good at replacing dead out colonies because in order to survive, they have to replace those dead out colonies. So those beekeepers that are surviving have to be innovative and on top of these mites in order to survive, and still they continue to lose mites or bees. It also means that from a regulatory point of view or from a scientific point of view, I think we've been easy to dismiss a lot of losses due to mites because, you know, and indeed, when I first heard about this problem, I thought, oh, it's mites. And so While we say that we saw the first cases last year, it is very likely, in hindsight, to think that it perhaps started earlier. We just weren't on top of it. But the story of CCD in the last year really started with Dave Hackenberg, who's a beekeeper in Pennsylvania. He's the poster child of CCD. To do it over again, maybe we should have called it Hackenberditis. But his story is this, that he had hives in Pennsylvania that he described